Yeah, we thank God for who He is, and we know one of the things that one of the ways He manifests Himself to us is that He's a good Father. He's a good Father, and so we are very, very grateful for that. And speaking of fathers, we've been in a series on parenting, and last week we took a look at the responsibility of children, that is to obey and honor. And then we kind of gave a peace plan for the children, how they can make a contribution. And today we're going to go a little bit further and talk about the responsibilities of parents. And so we're going to start off. I have my wife with me, Tanya, and back by popular demand. And so we're so excited that she's with us. And so we're going to kind of dive into talking about a little bit more about parenting today. So here's some parents' favorite or famous phrases. And so you kind of give me a little reaction to these, all right? Okay. So, and for those of you, you can actually finish this if you know this, all right? This is going to hurt me.
More than it hurts you.
Yeah, that doesn't even make sense to me. Like, it never, when my parents were disciplining me, I never saw my parents cry. I never heard them say ouch or anything like that. So again, I don't even know where that came from, but it didn't make sense to me. And I think I kind of understand, like, I don't want to do this. But in a child's mind, it was like, I want to see you cry too as I cry. So that was my thing. All right, how about this one? Straighten up your face before it
freezes like that.
Okay, all right. So, did you use that? Did your parents use that on you?
Oh yeah, I might use that too. So.
Okay, all right. So, all right. So when I was
your age?
Yes.
Oh, okay. When I was your age, I was I had six jobs or something like that.
Well, that was a kind of a slip up right there. So. When I was your age, I had six jobs, and I walked up the hill with
both ways,
bucket of water, and
had to feed the cow.
Broken toes and no shoes and all that kind of stuff. All right, so here's another one.
Snow.
Stop crying before I...
I'll give you something to cry about.
Okay, all right.
I was trying to think of the one that I use. I'll say... stop crying about everything. Save your tears for something important.
Okay. So. All right. So again, something. Stop crying before I give you something to cry about. Yeah. Again, I know my mother used that for me. My father used that for me, and I'm quite sure your parents did for you. And I'm quite sure for some of you, your parents did probably did the same thing. And again, I thought, again, this is just the way my mind was working. I don't think you can give me a punishment that's going to make me cry any more than what I'm crying right now. So again, that one, another one, that didn't really, really make sense to me. Here's another. I'm going to throw this one in. Don't you make me pull this car over. You remember that?
Yeah, and turn around and... Well, if you're fighting in the back.
Yeah, if you're fighting in the back. Don't make me stop and pull it make me pull this car. So anyway, those are kind of fighting words, right? Those are kind of like fighting words for parents and children. And we dealt with some of the children's fighting words last week and then some of the parents' fighting words. I mean, we know there are more and there are some words and attitudes that go deeper. And we see the war just... constantly heating up over and over again. And again, both are on either side waiting and poised to do battle. But it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. And here's what we believe. And I'm going to give you the kind of the same thought from last week, but I'm going to substitute a word. Instead of children, we're going to have parents. And so you're going to see that on the screen. Christian families can end the war. Can end the war and have peace and harmony in their homes when parents fulfill their divine responsibilities found in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. Now, again, we're talking about families that are followers of Jesus. This is what Paul is taught. This is who Paul is talking to. He's talking about children and parents, and it's in the larger context of being filled with the Holy Spirit. Now, again, I want you to know that children, you can't fulfill your divine responsibilities. Parents, you can't fulfill your divine responsibilities unless you and I are controlled by the Spirit of God. All right? So that's the big thought. So now we're talking to parents today. Last week we talked to children, obey and honor, and now we're going to look at the responsibilities of the parents. Parents, are you ready? Are you ready for your medicine? Come and take your Father's John or your three sixes or whatever your medicine, the medicine of you didn't like growing up. All right, so here it is. Here's the first responsibility. The first responsibility of the parent is don't provoke your children to anger. Don't provoke my children to anger. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, this is what it says. It says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now, when Paul uses the term don't provoke, the word provoke is don't make your children angry. Don't use consistent, the way you treat them, the way you talk to them, it has a tendency to building up gradual resentment and bitterness, and it makes them angry. It irritates them or exasperates them. And so provoking children to anger suggests a repeated, not just the one time, a repeated and ongoing pattern of treatment and behavior that gradually builds up a deep-seated anger and resentment in the child. Now, this is very important because Paul had to say this because the father had supreme authority in the family. And one of the ways that was expressed is when the mother bore a child, they would bring the child and lay the child before the father. Now, I don't like this, but this is what was happening during this time. It was perfectly legal. If the father picked up the child, then it was a sign that he was accepting the child into the family. If the father did not pick up the child, it was a sign that he was rejecting the child, and the child could be sold, or the child could be given away, or the child could simply be left out in the elements for the exposure to the weather to kill the child. Now, no loving father during this time would do that, but there were some fathers who actually did. It was legal for fathers to do that. That's because they had supreme authority over the family. Now, Paul says in this verse, in this very simple verse, is now, yes, you have supreme authority, but I want you to use your authority not to abuse your children, but to encourage your children, to form your children, to shape your children, to develop your children, to let your children know that you love them and that they are wanted and that they matter to you, that you see them. And so Paul had to give this command because the larger culture said a father could do anything he wanted to a child. And Paul says, now that you are a follower of Jesus, you have a responsibility to develop your child, not to discourage your child. So here's another passage with kind of using similar language, but Paul actually expands it a little bit. And this is Colossians chapter 3, verse 21. And this is what it says. Colossians chapter 3, verse 21. It says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. Now, the word provoke in Colossians chapter 3, verse 21 is not the same word that we find in Ephesians chapter 6. The word provoke in Colossians is to embitter your child, to cause them to be resentful, and to treat them in such a way that it leads to discouragement, lest you discourage them. All right, so combining this together, provoking, making them angry, but also embittering them to a place of resentfulness and even hatred, that it discourages your child to grow. It discourages him or her to grow psychologically and emotionally and spiritually. And so when Paul says, do not provoke your children to anger, that's what he had in mind. So the question, the natural question that you're asking and the question that I'm asking is, how do modern day parents, or how do parents, period, provoke their children to anger? How do parents embitter their children? And so I wanted to be brave and to ask my children, how have mom and I provoked you to anger or embittered you? Now, I wanted to do this, but Tanya did not want to do this. She was adamantly against asking the children, how have we provoked them to anger? So I'm going to ask you a question. We've talked about this a little bit. So why were you defensive and say, daughter, I don't want them saying anything about how we provoke them to anger? So why?
Mostly because I know that I am imperfect, and I am aware of, I think, most of my imperfections, and then I didn't want them pointing out my other imperfections that I wasn't aware of. So I didn't want more imperfections to be highlighted.
So that's great. So one day, what we did, and again, when you want to ask this question, because it actually helps you to become a better parent. We all have blind spots as parents. And so one day we were on vacation. We were driving. I can't remember exactly where we were going, to Tennessee or something like that. And so we said, okay, I'm going to ask this question. I'm saying, so what is it like to be on the other side of me? That's like if you are not ready for the answer, even if you're not ready for the answer, you should still ask the question, because it will help you be a better parent. Stop shaking your head. It is a good question. How do I present myself? And we had such an interesting time, and the kids were so quick to tell us what it was like to be on the other side of us. Mm-hmm. But when we start telling them what it was like to be on the other side of them, they got a little defensive. So anyway, I digress. I asked them the question, how have we embittered you? How have we provoked you to anger? So here are some of their answers. So not having genuine conversations. This is more on dad's part. They wanted to make sure that he put that in there. This is more on dad's part, because mom gives them everything they want. She's a perfect parent. So anyway, no, she's not, but sometimes she thinks she is. All right. So anyway, there's this, and then he goes on, he says, there's this desire to be known and simply to talk. But there are times in which it seems like all of our conversations have to have an agenda or a prompt. It's okay to talk just because. That's what one of my kids said, all right? That's what one of them said. Here's another one. It says, I would say something that made me feel bitter was when during the whole situation, when you all left to go on a cruise and we had a miscommunication, and I didn't stay at the house with Michaela. It just didn't feel like family. It's like, wow, okay, that was good for us to hear. Here's another one. I don't get angry or bitter very often, but probably. Now, we're paying all his money for education and college, and he's using probably, all right? Probably the only times I've ever felt like that is when I thought you guys didn't believe I could do something that I was working to do. So this has to do with believing in your children. It can actually provoke them to anger. And then here is another. Is when there's a double standard. And then Michaela goes on to give examples. How Marvin, Micah, and Ashton, at my age and now, could and would stay out all night. They did not stay out all night, by the way. And you and mom wouldn't even know where they were. We did know where they were. And what they were doing, Well, we didn't know all the things they were doing or what time they got home. But I can't even go out past 12 because it's too late, even though you guys know exactly where I am and who I'm with and what I'm doing. And then she says, okay, I have a second one because I couldn't decide on the first one. And then when my problems don't seem to get taken seriously and jokes are made when I'm trying to be serious and actually share my thoughts. And she said, it hurts more for me because I don't like sharing my mind. So when I do, I get jokes in return instead of serious responses. And so one of the things to know about our family likes to joke. We like to laugh. We like to have fun. And sometimes the joking can actually go a little bit too far and where we are not paying attention. And so these are some that in our own family. And so we just wanted you to know it a little bit. So there's a whole list. We're not going to give you all of them, but we're going to talk about some. All right, Tanya, what's another way parents can provoke their children to anger?
When there's inconsistency. So,
okay, when you talk about inconsistency, what do you mean by that?
So one day it's these are the rules, and the next day the rules change.
Okay, so inconsistency. Another one is lying to your children. And this goes to integrity. So if you're lying to your children will ask, can I trust my parents on anything? And so being truthful to your children or lying to your children is another way to actually provoke them to anger. What's another one?
So failure to spend time with your child. And many people think that you have to book a vacation to Hawaii or something like that. We used to do a thing that was called a day with dad. And the kids would choose whatever day that they were born on, and they would came out to about an hour, and do whatever they wanted, whatever their choice was. I remember Michaela's choice was to read books. So you guys would go to the library and just read books to each other. But they feel heard and special and important, all the things that they are, but usually parents are busy working and providing, and we don't think about that the son or daughter wants to spend that kind of time with us, and they do.
So again, failure to spend time with your kids could lead to provoking them to anger. Again, we talked about double standards. That can provoke them to anger. And then what's another one?
Failing to love your spouse. If you choose to...
And that's for people, obviously, who are married.
Yeah.
Obviously.
If you choose the children over your spouse, they can see that, and they will use that.
Yeah. So. And the other thing is that if particularly for me, and if I treated my wife poorly, I shared a story last week about my dad and my mom, and that embittered me when I saw how my dad treated my mom in that instance. And so to treat Tanya in a poor way, to yell at her, to be abusive and those kinds of things, I know it would embitter them. It would anger them. And you know, your kids are going to side with mom. They're going to protect mom. And so protecting your marriage is a way to encourage them and not provoke them to anger. Let's do just a couple more because we got to move on.
Well, I'll jump around. One of the things I think is really applying to us now is not adapting to the current stage of development. So the same thing that you did for them when they were four is not, you don't respond or interact with them when they're 14. So growing with your child, I think.
Yeah, that is so, so key that this is one way. And again, we've seen this in our own lives, and you'll hear your teenager say, I am not 5 years old. I'm no longer a child, because sometimes we fail to grow. As Tanya said, we fail to grow with them as they get older, entering into their world, understanding. And so those are some ways in which we can we end up provoking our children to anger. There are a few more, being overly critical, but we'll kind of cut it there. And it seems like Satan befriends the parents in order to get to the children. I believe sometimes Satan gets to us. He gets in our hearts. He tempts us and he woos us because he's not necessarily getting, yes, he's getting to us, but he really is after your legacy. He is after your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, and he is after ruining an entire generation, and he does it through the parents. Sometimes parents, I hear parents all the time say, I cannot stand this angry generation. And I look them in the eye, you're sounding like you've had nothing to do with this angry generation. This verse actually helps us to understand we play a part. If our kids are angry, if this is an angry generation, we have to go back to the parents and ask the question, what are some things we've done to actually provoke this generation to anger and bitterness and resentment and this sense of, I don't want to have anything to do with my parents. So the first one is negative. Don't provoke your children to anger. The second one is, the second two are a little bit more positive. And so number two is nurture my children. So you see the phrase in the Bible, bring them up. That's a Greek word for nourish them, take care of them, to love them. This word shows up in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 29, when Paul says to the husband, nourish your wife, care for your wife, love your wife. And so the idea here is for you and I to nurture our children, to nourish our children, in a way that lets them know that they're cared for, that they're wanted in the family, that they are special, that they matter. Not taking it over the top, but to say that I see you. I see your personality. I see your pain. I see if they come home and say, Mom, I was bullied, and not to just say, oh, you know, dry up those tears. And no, to say, listen, like, I was bullied when I was a kid. And I stuttered as a kid. I had a bad, both Tanya and I, we stuttered very badly when we were kids. And so there's, we were bullied and picked on and talked about. And so to know that our kids are dealing with all kinds of things, to say we understand and to bring them close and not drive them away when they're going through difficult times. And one of the examples is Jesus himself. There are at least four ways we can nurture, or in four areas where we can nurture our children. And Jesus is the example of this. This is Luke chapter 2, verse 52. Luke chapter 2, verse 52. And this is what Luke said about Jesus. Luke chapter 2, verse 52. Okay, and Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and men. There are four areas that you see in that passage, and I'm going to kind of run through them very quickly. He increased in wisdom. That is, nurture our kids intellectually. Instead of them in front of the screen all the time, instead of them playing video games, nourish their minds nourish them intellectually, giving them books to read, books that you maybe read when you were growing up. During the summertime, summer reading, there are resources that we can provide for you. Tanya was really, really good in helping our children to read at an early age and to give them a love for books. And am I?
Yes, yeah. Yes. We would definitely enroll in all the summer reading programs at the library where you win prizes for reading. Such a pivotal part of schooling. So But yes, because I love reading, so I transferred it to the kids.
And so we put them in Chinese camp one summer. Yeah. They hated it. They hate it. But we said, we have a responsibility to nourish your minds intellectually. The second way is Jesus grew physically. And so getting our kids involved in physical activity. Now, I know every kid may not like sports. I just so happen to love sports. And I know a lot of people in my circle, they love sports. And Carolyn loves sports. And Tanya is not one of those who loves sports, all right? It was not a deal breaker for me when we got married. And so she did not like, you didn't like sports, did you?
No.
Okay, she didn't like sports.
Well, I never learned how to play well.
So. Okay, all right. So that was part of one of the reasons why you didn't like it. So, but being able to help them grow physically, and then he grew in favor with God, helping them to know and nurture them spiritually, knowing what to read and reading the Bible with them and reading the Bible to them. That's one way to nurture your children spiritually. Bring them to church with you. And this is the reason why church ought not be boring. It should be fun because this is an opportunity for us to nourish them spiritually. So when they get older, they will say, man, I learned so much about God while having fun at the same time, and then nourishing them socially, helping them to understand how to say thank you and to shake hands and look someone in the eye and to know what it's like to engage in social settings. If you're an introvert, here's how to have a conversation. If you're an extrovert, well, you don't have to teach them how to have a conversation because extroverts will just have conversations like as they're coming in and as they're going out. But being able to nourish them in those four areas, it is absolutely important. Your child is a whole child, not just spiritual. So that means we have to look deep within and say, how can I help them intellectually? How can I help them physically? How can I nourish and love them spiritually and socially? So again, Paul says, nurture your children. And then here's the third one. Here's the third one. Train and warn my child. Train and warn my children. So the first one is don't provoke your children to anger. Nurture my children. And then train and warn my children. Now, the reason I have train and warn, because they are so close together, because the word discipline and instruction, Paul kind of had similar things in mind, is that one of the ways in which we instruct our children, one of the ways we train our children, one of the ways we correct them is through discipline and instruction. And so Paul gives a kind of this encouragement that parents, you play a vital, vital role in helping to determine the impact your child will have on the world and in the world. And that happens through discipline and instruction. The reason why discipline is important is because our children snatch the authority away from us. Sometimes our children mock us and ridicule us. And sometimes children cuss their parents out and are disrespectful and dishonoring. And so there is something that we have to do to bring them and put them back on tracks. And that happens through discipline. All right. So let me give you a few passages that kind of talk about that. These are all from Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24. It says, "Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him." All right. So what do you think about that particular passage and even the way we disciplined our children?
So, punishment shouldn't be the same for every child, that you have to know your child and know what kind of discipline he will respond to. If you say, okay, you're going to go to your room and that's your time out, and the kid loves to spend time in their room and they're reading, well, that's not really a good punishment for him. So you have to know the child, and discipline is good. It's for the parents and the child, but you have to know which kind of discipline works for which child.
Right. And even the bottom line for discipline, you know, when we think of discipline, we immediately go to punitive and punishment. But discipline is really about nurturing and training. Sometimes there's the timeout, and sometimes there's the little, we use a wooden spoon or a little cleaner rod to one little pop and to remind them that that's not the way you go. But the bottom line behind discipline is training the child's heart, training their mind in correct behavior. Now, that's not just correct behavior and they're thinking something else inside. It is like if you go out, if you go outside of this house and do this to someone else, you might go to jail. Like this is like we're trying to help you and correct behavior so that you learn how to interact with and respect other individuals as you go out. Here's another passage, Proverbs chapter 19, verse 18. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 18. Discipline your son, for there is hope. So in other words, you're saying there is hope for this child and hope for his future if you discipline this child, that they'll be thinking differently when they get older. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. So my mother and father used to discipline me. I would scream and scream like, "You're gonna kill me! You're gonna kill me!" And she said, "I'm not gonna kill you. You won't die with this little pop on your leg." And again, kids are so overdramatic. Like I would when my mother and father would pop me one time, I would fall all over the floor and I would scream and it would be I was too dramatic. Were you the same way?
No, that was not allowed. We could not do that.
You had to sit there and take it.
That's right.
All right. And then you, like, could you cry?
Yes, you could cry, okay. But not all this drama stuff. Okay. You couldn't do
it. Well, I ran. I ran from my mother, and someone should have told me that if you run from her, it's going to make it worse. And so if you discipline your child, you want part of the reason we don't like disciplining our children, and this is a hot take, is because we want to be friends with our children. Mm-hmm. And it's because we don't want our children to not like us. Mm-hmm. And so what we end up doing, we end up not training them, not correcting them. Mm-hmm. Because we don't like the feeling. We have a failure of nerve because we don't like the reactivity of our children, and we don't like them being angry and mad with us and walking through the house not saying anything. But the reality is God has given you charge of those children, and he's given us charge of ours. And we have a responsibility to nurture them, bless them, honor them, encourage them, and periodically, sometimes it does take punitive discipline to correct them and to get them back on track. All right, so again, let me give you, we're training our children in not just right behavior, we're training our children in right thinking about God, right thinking about life, right thinking about chores and those kinds of things. And so we're raising up children not only to love Jesus, but to know how to function in life. How to balance a checkbook and how to drive a car, how to tie your shoes and how to ride a two-wheeler and how to mow the grass and how to empty the dishwasher and how to vacuum and how to wash clothes. My mother taught me that. Now, this is going to seem so racially and politically charged, whites with whites and colors with colors. That's not what I'm talking about here, right? That you wash white clothes with white clothes and you wash darker clothes with darker clothes. Why? Because the darker clothes would bleed into the white clothes, and then you would have like a pink shirt or you would have, you know, a black shirt when it should have been white. And so those kinds of things. So again, teaching our children the basic things. Fathers, teach your son, if you don't know how, teach your son how to tie a tie. My dad didn't teach me how to tie a tie. But my brother did. And so there are ways in which we can bless our kids, not just teaching them about Jesus, but we can teach them about how Jesus matters in all of life and not just when we go to church. All right. So let me give you the peace plan. And this is how fathers and mothers can end the war. Again, we talked about the responsibilities. Do not provoke your children to anger, but to nurture my child and to warn and train my child. But then here are some practical tips. That is, number one, this is the P in peace. Pray and play. Pray and play. And what I mean by that is pray for your child and let them hear you pray for them. Let them hear you talk to God on their behalf. That John or Mary, God, you have placed so much inside of them, and I just love the way you have invested in them and the way they smile. Their smile lights up a room, or the way they play with their friends. I just absolutely love that. The way they stand up for you, God. Call that stuff out in them, because they will hear that and they will respond to that. Pray for them. And then let them see you praying. Now, this is not practicing your good deeds before people, but let them catch you talking to God and working on your own relationship with Jesus Christ, and not just we are Christians on Sunday when we go to church. No, we are followers of Jesus throughout the entire week, and Jesus matters to us not only when we go to church, but when we are away from church. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it's important that, well, first of all, kids will learn from you. So if they see you praying, then they see that it's important. And then they learn how to pray from watching you pray. So
that's good. Tanya has her devotion time, and it's out kind of publicly, and not she's not practicing her good deeds before man. Is that she has a spot that she does her devotion, and whoever comes downstairs know not to sit in that spot. Do not sit on the corner of the couch, because that's where her Bible is, and that's where she goes after God. And then pray and play. That is you and I, as parents, we ought not take ourselves too seriously. The kids ought to see us laughing and playing and joking, and we ought to play with each other. Like the kids broke an egg on my head, and I should have known. I should have saw it coming, and they got me. I got on that one, and they got me really good. And I didn't get upset like, what are you doing? Yeah, I'm the father. No, I didn't do that. I laughed with them. Because they got me, and I told them that as a father, I know I'm not supposed to get revenge, but when you least expect it, you will get it, and you will feel the wrath of dad. Yes. And so pray and play. What do you think of that?
There's a lot of laughter in our house, probably too much. And so I mean, probably need to dial it down a bit, I don't know, and be more serious. But there's a lot of play and laughter. So.
Well, one of the things that we talked about, and I found the research on this, is that when me and the boys would roughhouse, mm-hmm. Tanya would get a little bit nervous and like, y'all stop all that roughhousing. Listen, there's research now. There's research that says that a father who roughhouses with his children, particularly his boys, they are even more well-rounded psychologically and physically and otherwise. And so we get an opportunity. This is research by McDonough and Park. This is what it says. Fathers play a key role in optimum development of psychological and emotional traits like empathy, emotional control, and the ability to navigate complex social relationships. So fathers, get close to your children. Don't break their spirit now, but to let them know that you love them. And that one way to do that is to play with them roughhouse. All right, so encourage and empower. So encourage and empower. Parents, observe your child and call out the gold in them. So encourage them and then empower them. Empower them with responsibilities in the house. Empower them with helping them to balance the checkbook. Have them sit down next to you when you are balancing the checkbook. Have them sit down next to you when you are doing the bills. And that way you're letting them know that, number one, you're a part of this house, but you're also giving them giving them responsibility or tools to use when they get older. Now, some of your kids who are kind of smart, Alex, they'll say, well, why don't you add another $50 in my, for us kids? And I said, no, that's not what we're talking about here. I'm just giving you tools to know. Empower them to understand how insurance works. Empower them to understand how investments work. Spend time with them, letting them know where important papers are. So in case something happens to you, these are for older kids, obviously, they will know where to go to get those papers. If something happens, Tanya and I, we've talked about this, if something happens to us, then Uncle Curtis and Aunt Monica are going to be responsible for you, and in terms of trust, not only in terms of physical, but also the financial trust and all of those kinds of things. So again, we are raising children to help them with tools to know how to work in life. Okay, apologize and forgive. Apologize and forgive. This is the A. Apologize and forgive. If you have hurt your children, humble yourselves and apologize. Tanya and I, we've done our share of apologies, and we've done our share of asking for forgiveness. And we've done our share of forgiving our children for the way they've responded. So apologize and forgive. I got to move on. Coach and mentor. This is the C. Coach and mentor. Coaching, there's a difference between coaching and mentoring. Coaching is drawing out, and we typically draw out what's inside through questions, really, really good questions. Some of your teenagers and kids may not say, well, I don't know. You ask them a question. I don't know. And that's okay. Keep asking the questions. It lets them know that you love them. And then mentoring is putting in. And we're putting in information about God. We're putting in information about how to do life. And we're putting in information about our own stories of how we've either failed or have succeeded in our relationship with God. And then finally, enter and engage. Enter their world and engage. Enter into their world and engage in their lives. And I'm going to have Tanya have the last word on this one. Enter their world and engage. What would you say to parents about that?
Well, you can ask them what kinds of things that they enjoy doing, and then say, hey, can I do it with you? Pet sitting, going to get a mani-pedi. That's my favorite. But the important part is asking them what they like, and then can you join them? Going to a social event, well, pre-COVID, but I mean, whatever kinds of things that they like to do, and then just joining them with that.
Yeah, that's really good. So we're gonna try to tackle just a couple of questions. We're over time. Then we're gonna bring Carolyn back on. So there are some really good ones here. And one is there's a subtle estrangement between me and my son over a difference in his church loyalty and affiliation. I don't agree with the overarching prosperity messages that are being taught. How do I get past this? That's a great question. And again, this is your adult son, I don't know the age of the son, but if your son is an adult son, then your son is making choices for himself. Now, you can express your opinion about that you don't agree with that, and you can show in scripture, but again, not beating him over the head with it. The best way you're gonna get to the heart of your son is to love him, is to care for him, and to say, there's a subtle, you gotta separate the church and separate the fact that this is my son and I love him, and there's nothing that can stop me from loving him and to going and from going after his heart. Again, you can share what you think and your opinion about that church through the Word of God, but to try to force him and belittle another church and belittle another pastor and belittle him. Remember what Paul said in Philippians, that there are some pastors who are preaching and teaching for gain, but the gospel is still being preached. And Paul said, hey, as long as the gospel is still being preached and that and people are going after the heart of God, then Paul says, I may not like what they're doing, but they're still preaching the gospel. Mm-hmm. And so, or at least they're preaching, connecting with God. And so again, that's a, we can say more on that, but that's a quick response to that. And here's another one. And I'm going to let you have this one, Tanya. Can we talk about appropriate ways to talk about sex with our children?
Oh yeah. Humor, but I use that way too much. But yeah, when I've tackled tough subjects like this, I try to separate the emotion from it because it can be very emotional. So I try to put on my most boring history voice. And so I was like, so this is your body. Your body has hormones. So anyway, I try to just go with it like a professor would, but not as with all this emotion that we tend to have, because this is my actual child I'm talking about sexual things to. So that's what I've got. That's my go-to.
Yeah, and again, you wanna be honest. You wanna be honest, and what does God say about that? And and again, this is where I think coaching comes in terms of asking questions about where they, who they're hanging with. And, let me ask a question. I'm going to be very blunt and honest. Are you sexually active? And typically that either makes them really like, ugh, kind of thing, or and most times kids will be honest if you have a relationship with them. Here's the key. In all of this that we're talking about, absent of a relationship, we'll never be successful in this. But if you have been building a relationship over time with your child, there's almost absolutely nothing that they won't tell you and divulge to you, because you've built into them and you've built a solid relationship and they trust you and you've not lied to them, but you've been truthful to them, and they will love you for your honesty, and you will love them for their ability to be able to talk to you about almost anything. All right, that's our time. Man, we are way, way over time. I'm bringing Carolyn back on. Carolyn, come join us. And so thank you so much.
Awesome. And at the top of this service, we were talking about squishy subjects, the math versus the reading. And parenting is super squishy.
It's super squishy. Super squishy.
And we couldn't, you could preach on parenting all year long and not hit on every age and stage and specific situation. And believe me, I've tried to find the simple ABC steps to parenting, and it's not out there.
It's not out there.
But what is good news is, just as you said, it comes out of our relationship with our kids and a relationship with our Heavenly Father. Even thinking of the worship songs we sang, He is faithful. He is good. He is right with us through the fire. And sometimes those parenting moments, they are fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not in the good way.
Absolutely.
But He's with us.
Yeah.
So thank you for your words. Thank you for your encouragement. And Trinity family, have an awesome afternoon. Take care. We'll see you later.